He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
It is a wonderful day to be driving vehicles, and I thought about it as I was driving up to do the show, as I was driving a convertible and watching other convertibles go by with the tops down, as was mine. And it gave me the thought that as we watch the summer come in and new cars come on the market, a list of fun-to-drive cars might be something listeners might like to hear about. Most of them are smaller and two-door coupes, in my mind. Jay may have a different thought when he chimes in here. But there are a lot of very fun cars, past and present and oncoming, that are going to return to the roads for the summer season. And, Jay, why don't you start off with a list of cars you think are fun to drive these days?
Mazda MX-5, Toyota GR86, and Subaru BRZ, although I've never driven them. New generation is out, and I think it's a great car. Same car, actually. I like driving. I like light and sporty cars. But if you just want to cruise around, I think, and obviously I think you were referring to that car, Audi's A5 Cabriolet is always a very popular car, and actually a good all-around car, a year-round car, because it's also an all-wheel drive. So, you know, you can enjoy it in the summer, and you can still get around in the winter.
And BMW has their equivalent convertibles that I'm sure are just as enjoyable to drive as the Audis are. It's too bad, well, the American industry is devoid of a lot of convertibles. You have the Mustang convertibles, which are around and fun to drive. I'm not sure that GM has any convertibles out currently.
The Camaro
is a convertible. Yes, the Camaro. Yeah. I forgot that. That's right. And maybe in the Stellantis world, there may be Charger convertibles, but I haven't seen many. But back to the fun of these cars. As Jay mentioned, lightness is a very nice feel to some of the smaller cars that Jay mentioned. I have an 84 Mazda RX-7, which I absolutely have revived my interest in driving, finding just exactly how nimble that car feels on the road. The frightening thing about the RX-7, and I don't think it exists in the new Subarus and Toyotas and Mazdas that Jay was talking about, is the lightness of these cars from yesteryear. The Mazda that I have is an 84, and it is, I would think that I haven't driven a recent MX-5, but the old Mazda Miatas are in this same group as I'm discussing back in the 70s and 80s when they were out, and they are extraordinarily light by comparison to the newer models that Jay mentioned, if only because there are far more safety features. There's probably more airbags and weight in the new ones that make them maybe feel a little bit more stable on the road, but no less fun to drive. But the older ones are just amazingly, they just feel like featherweights compared to
the Robin, newer ones. Well, Robin, if I can interject, I rode with you in your 1984 Mazda RX-7. And, you know, I used to think I trusted your driving, and I still do, but the ride in that just reminds you of how far we have come as far as safety and protection.
Yes.
Because although those cars were very light, and it's only maybe 40 years ago, and we remember those times quite well, again, we've come a long way. Tires have improved a lot. We ride on much bigger, much taller and wider tires. The structures of the cars are way stronger than they were then, and all that adds weight. But as you mentioned, you know, there are still a few cars on the market that are relatively light and fun to drive.
Very definitely. I think that the one thing that these two-door coupes do entice Americans or people into buying are the relative cost savings that you can get. The problem with all these cars that we're discussing right now is that they're not particularly practical for many categories of owners that drive cars and don't have the ability to have multiple cars in their driveways due to the financial burden that that owning multiple cars takes on. But those who can have these vehicles can take them out on a day like our broadcast day, which may not be when you hear the show, but it is a sparkling sunny day. Temperatures are going to end up in this particular broadcast day in the 70s. It started out a lot lower, but the tops were down on all the convertibles I saw on my drive up from New Canaan to the broadcast area this morning. And there were a number of people out in those cars, and the tops were all down, which the temperature was reading on the gauge in my car was 59 degrees. But when you have the top down and the four windows up and maybe it's some heat coming out of the vents and maybe heated seats to warm you in the cooler temperatures, it is just a wonderful way to enjoy driving from A to point A to point B.
So, Robin, let me put you on the spot on a related topic, if I may, and without getting into specific numbers. I mean, we know that, you know, part of the cost associated with owning and running a car is insurance, and that can run very high numbers. How does it work? I mean, most insurance policies have a maximum number of cars you can own, which I know for a fact that you have more than four cars. How does that work, and are you?
Well, I'll tell you how it's worked for me, because I price checked insurance companies some years back. I haven't had to recently. One of the problems I ran into with the numbers of cars I have was that they didn't want to insure a bulk rate of cars. The crazy thing about that is, as an owner, I can only drive one of those cars at a time. And so I never quite understood why they didn't really want to get involved in insuring, let's say, six-plus cars in a bulk situation. The insurance company that I have now has no problem with that. Also, they are very forgiving in that I do call them up and take some of the cars off-road insurance in the wintertime, because they're not practical to drive in the winter, so why pay the insurance for that time other than comprehensive, which covers potential injury inside a garage or maybe outside in a weather-related situation. But it can be a quandary. It does save me a lot of money by doing this, because I do not want to pay full insurance annually on six-plus cars that I have floating around. So I have to pay attention to my driving times, and when I take the car off the road in the fall and not back on the road until the spring, I do take collision off all those vehicles, which saves a considerable amount of money. But many companies don't want to do it.
You can actually do that. It's not exorbitant. I mean, the insurance cost in owning one or two fun cars on the side is not a deal killer.
That is correct. It is not a deal killer. One of the things that many of my cars have gotten very old, and maybe until some recent adjustments in what used car prices have apparently been doing, they don't have a lot of value, collision value, once they get over 10 years old, or even maybe before that, but 10 years old, and thus I have several well over 10 years old. And collision value is a problem, because as the cars get older and they become less costly, I mean less insurable at their full replacement cost, should you get in an accident, it takes nothing in accident terms to have an accident which is going to cost considerably more to repair the cost or to repair the injury to the car. And what insurance companies basically do is they tend to total the cars if the cost to repair is more than the value of the car. So you sometimes, unless you want to take it out of pocket to do it, because you want to restore something like an old Bronco or something, which I don't have, but people have done that. I get back to the Bronco in a minute. This is the problem in insurance in general.
You probably regret now not owning one of your old Broncos, right?
Yes, in New Canaan this weekend, there is a beautifully restored 73 Bronco parked at a garage and with a for sale sign on it, and in very small print, which I had to get out of the car to look at, the asking price was a six figures. You're exactly right, Jay, $103,000.
Yep, now, and I've seen them go on and bring a trailer for that price.
I'm going to watch this one because this is a New Canaan car, which I have seen at the New Canaan Auto Show a year ago and is now up for sale. The funny thing about it is its roof was off, so I didn't go in and talk about it because I really had no interest in trying to think about buying it, but it was interesting to see. I did look the vehicle over. It is jacked up on a higher suspension system. It has big wheels on it. It's got a V8 engine, modified, I'm sure. I didn't hear it run. It was in beautiful condition. And these are all the original Broncos were only two-door. There never was a four-door Bronco around until the current crop of Broncos. So it just was a beautiful vehicle. And the funny thing about it is that while driving around in the same area yesterday, I saw as an intersection another old 70s Bronco coming at me, and it was the one for sale is a cobalt blue, I guess it's cobalt, is a proper blue. I don't know if that was standard color or not, but this one was red, and it was it looked identical to the blue one. But it was not for sale. It was being driven by its owner, presumably. And to see two of those great era Broncos on the road in beautiful condition was really a nice sight to behold.
So $100,000 today, and how much did you pay for yours back?
Jay, you know, it's a good question. I think I ordered my vehicle back in '69. Optioned it up to is about as much extra equipment as you could get done at the factory, and I don't think it was over $4,900. Six-cylinder, manual, three on the tree, as they say, or three on the step, whatever, and six-cylinder engine before the V8s came out, and I believe it was under $5,000. It may even be under four.
And how much did you pay for your RX-7 back in the early mid-'80s?
I think that was around $8,000.
Okay, so I'm looking at numbers now and bring a trailer, and you would probably not do quite as well with the Mazda today as you might have done with the Bronco had you kept one. But I'm looking at prices for your 1984 Mazda, and they are running, you know, just under or just above $20,000 for recent sales.
That's very nice to hear. I was recently offered, well, last year when I went through a car wash in Millerton, I came out of the car wash and a couple of guys were there, and I got a proposition to sell my Mazda, and I said it wasn't for sale, but he tendered an offer of something between $12,000 and $15,000. I don't remember the exact situation. It was not tempting, but you have just confirmed my theory that the RX-7 that I have, which is in very excellent, overall excellent condition, has increased in value significantly since what I had to pay for it back in 84, I guess it was.
So I guess the message to our listeners is, go ahead and go and buy yourself a little toy car, and it might not be a waste of money after all.
It might not if you are, if you end up keeping it. I was lamenting the fact that I did not keep either of my Broncos, and I cannot remember why I lost them in my inventory of cars that I've kept over the years, because I sure wish I had at least one of the two of them that I ultimately had two still in my stable and had kept it sort of the way I kept them, the RX-7, which was not driven a whole lot for many years. I don't think I've got 34,000 miles on that car, and so that helps the value situation on that vehicle considerably. Let's move on. You have some subjects.
Sure. Well, speaking of...
You have something about safety in water bottles.
Safety in water bottles. So, not-so-funny thing happened this weekend. We were enjoying dinner on Saturday night, and all of a sudden there was a big bang, and the power went out. So, ran outside, and sure enough, it was kind of an unlikely situation because there was no traffic. It was about 9 o'clock at night, and there was a pickup truck with a big trailer that had veered off the street and gone into a telephone pole on the left-hand side of the road. And everybody was okay. There were a couple occupants in the trailer and in the car, not the trailer. And it took the pole down, and we were out of power for a good chunk of the night. But that's not my point. Is, you know, we were like, how the heck did this happen? And you know, lo and behold, it was simply the driver, who is a known, you know, known around here, serious person, is a good driver actually. Just lost his water bottle and it rolled under the floor and, you know, bent down to pick it up, and before he knew it, he was in the phone pole.
Well, you know, this is an interesting. I'm glad to know what that topic was about when you sent it to me. It's very interesting. I have found, and I don't know whether it's happening more to me as I'm getting older, but I have found when I have taken my eyes off the road and leaned over to do something, inadvertently, somehow, the steering wheel turns because my arm moves without me knowing. And boy, when that happens, the car goes in a direction which you should not want to have happen. So I can see how that actually could have happened that way. And it takes to have the car start veering sideways when the steering wheel turns ever so little while you're maybe looking for that water bottle that rolled under your foot or whatever. So that is a good safety point to think about. You should not get distracted by...
It can happen to anybody.
It can happen to anybody at any time.
But the way for it not to happen, of course, is to, before you move, make sure you have everything that's in the car that you may or may not need, be in a secure position or place, and if it is something you're going to need to reach, make sure it's in a place that's a dedicated place where you can actually reach it without having to take your eyes off the road and without leaning. The thing in this case, and like you mentioned, if you're... It's one thing your eyes go off the road and you know, your hands follow your eyes. And if you lean down and drop a shoulder, you're cranking the wheel. Again, you know, look ahead, don't turn around while you're driving, and make sure things are secure. And yes, a water bottle that runs on the floor can get in the way of your feet. So you do want to pick up things that are in your footwell, but the safest thing to do is come to the side and stop, and you waste a minute or two, but so be it.
Back to the steering.
The other thing too is that, you know, just a couple hours before that, I had been on the sidewalk where that happened, and anybody could have been on that sidewalk, and now you get run over by a vehicle that veers off the road. So, and my point is always, it's not, you know, what are the risks of getting run over by a car that's on the street on the main drag and going in a straight line? The chances are not very big, but the consequences are pretty bad. So,
well,
even if you're walking on the sidewalk, keep your eyes peeled and look at traffic. Don't trust anybody.
Continue on the pedestrian situation on the side of the roads. Some states have the laws when you're walking on the road highways that you should be walking facing the traffic, so that if somebody is going to have a steering issue with their car, you have a better chance of seeing it if you are actually facing the traffic coming at you than you are walking with the traffic coming behind you. And sidewalks don't discriminate between which way you're walking on them. So, Jay, you're right. If you were walking, let's say, downhill near where your sidewalk is and this vehicle had come along and veered off behind you, you wouldn't probably have had any time to make an escape motion because you wouldn't have been looking to see it coming at you. The other thing about walking I've noticed recently is that people who are not walking with brightly colored shirts or pants become very invisible when they're walking along roads. that are heavily treed in afternoon or cloudy weather and shadows that are overhanging the road because of the trees, which make people who are walking in there even more invisible from a distance before you get close enough to see them. And if you're not paying full attention to the road, it can be very dangerous for either the driver and or the person walking on the side of the road.
Right, so, which brings us to the usual. I'm not sure what the rules are, and people should
really
care less. I was just going to say. Care less about the rules.
But what does matter is the type of clothing. And I don't think people really think about what they're wearing when they go out for a walk. As a matter of fact, I'm sure they do not, because the number of people that do not have brightly colored clothing on leads me to believe that they just get in their whatever street clothes or their day clothes that they're wearing. They decide to go out for a walk. And if it's brown, black, gray, something that's not going to stand out against the shadows of tree-lined roads, you become very invisible. As the darkness falls, it gets even more dangerous.
Well, that's perfect. We've done safety tips. Jay, you have any? Since you started it, do you have one to finish it?
Always the same one. Keep your eyes peeled.
You're right.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing we have to keep reminding listeners. Just don't get distracted while you're driving. And it's all too easy to be distracted, even for a moment. Even looking over at the gypsy moth caterpillar. Trees along the sides of the mountains on some of these paralleling the roads we drive. This whole thing, Jay, dropping the shoulder or moving the arm just ever so bit while you're looking sideways, the car just doesn't stay in the line, maybe.
One of my favorite, and both of you ski, I do not, but one of my favorite car keys tips was actually the reminder that if you look at the object when you're skiing, this,
yep.
You don't want to hit. You're going right there.
That's yep. correct.
And I have always, that has always made perfect sense to me, driving as well. He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.